Hi, everybody. My name is Joe, and I'm an alcoholic. Okay, these are the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood it. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when we do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and practice these principles in all our affairs.
Dawn, can you read the preamble,
sure,
please?
Sure.
Everyone, I'm Don. I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not aligned with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
All right. Then, I would like to ask Peter to come up and read the traditions.
I'm Peter, still an alcoholic.
Hey, Peter!
All right. Each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is but a small...
That's a long edition.
That's long.
You want the long form?
No.
Oh, there we go. There we go. All right. On the left side. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, or prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personality.
Yeah, Peter!
All right, at this time, done with me. I'm going to turn this over to Curtis and let him introduce our speaker.
Everybody, I'm Curtis.
I happen to inherit a iPhone 1, 2, 3, or 4, or 5. I don't know. Silver and sparkly.
Ooh, pretty.
It is. Come and see me. Our speaker tonight is Lindsay O. I happen to know her from a couple of groups and seen her around, and I've heard her story, and it's a good story. And I know that she definitely helps people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And come on up.
My name's Lindsay O'Brien. I'm an alcoholic. You always want to yell in a microphone, really. I guess that's what it's
don't,
for.
Don't do that.
My sobriety date is July 9th of 2006. My home group is the Tampa Young People's Group. You meet on Thursday nights at 7:30, 500 West Platte Street. There are no age requirements, so if you haven't been there, it's been a while, you know, I'd come check it out. It's a double speaker meeting. We got homemade cookies and tea and lemonade and cup. It's the best deal in town for an hour. I got tricked into this. I got the old, hey, are you doing anything on this day? No, I look at my phone, no. Oh, great, you can speak in Silverstone. Oh, God. I have something to do, you know? I hate speaking. But try to show up when I'm asked to show up. Which is certainly not what came to AA. And I was thinking about the beer can and the garbage, and I can understand that, and I hope that person is in the room tonight so that, you know, if you are or if you're new and you don't relate to me, please don't take that as a sign that AA is no good. Please, you know, stick around and talk to somebody after the meeting. And I understand that. It actually gave me chills when I thought about it, because I understand really, really, really not wanting to drink. But the physical sobriety, like just being physically sober, eating away at my head, and I literally had no other choice, but I was literally going to explode out of myself until I was able to drink again. And so I understand that. And if you're in the room, I really encourage you to keep coming back. And like I said, don't place your, you know, opinion of AA on what it was about to fall out of my mouth, because who even knows? I brought my friend Cameron with me tonight. She recently moved here, so if you don't know Cameron, you should introduce yourself, because I'm here in the front. So I guess I'll start drinking. I started drinking. Had I known what alcohol was going to do for me, and the attitude that it was going to give me, I would have sought it out much earlier than I did. I started drinking when I was 14, which is, you know, kind of an old, a late bloomer in AA. But my parents didn't have alcohol in the house because we got a lot of, you know, problem drinkers, you know, in the family. So my mom thought, you know, we don't allow anybody to drink in the house, whatever. And she always told me, you know, you can't ever start drinking because you're going to be alcoholic. And self-knowledge will be nothing. I can certainly, you know, relate to many of the people that I've heard that prior to taking my first drink and you know, any time physically sober after, that my head is always eating at me. You know, I always wish, like, oh, well, if I only had blonde hair, you know, my whole life would have been different if I was blonde. I would have been alcoholic for sure, you know. Or if I had bangs, if my mother would let me have bangs. And I always wanted to be something other than who I was, and I was never happy with who I was or where I was or what I had. What I was doing, and that's followed me a lot into sobriety. Fortunately, the steps have relieved a lot of that. So I found the luxury of alcohol when I was 14, and that is the one and only time I ever drank, because somebody told me it would be cool if I did. After that, it was certainly my decision every single, well, until, you know, I crossed that line, I guess, but I was drinking for effect from then on out. And this guy who later was in prison, you know, he gave me my first, you know, drink of alcohol, and it was Everclear and a Sonic cup. And at that time, none of my friends, you know, my friends were not drinking Everclear, but I was like, hey, you know, I'm like the coolest friend, you know, and I very quickly lost all the friends that I had, as a matter of fact, but basically what happened to me when I was drinking, The effect that alcohol had on me was, I didn't think that I was somebody that I wasn't. I was just okay with who I was. Alcohol didn't give me, you know, larger chest or blonde hair or bangs or anything that I thought I needed to make myself happy. I was just okay with who I was and what I was doing and where I was at. And that's really what I wanted my entire life, is that feeling of everything's okay right now. And because I'm so self-centered, you know, without God's help and without, you know, a program or action, everything sucks. You know, whether it does in my head, everything sucks. And so I drank, and for the first time, everything didn't suck. And, you know, what happened with me is I very quickly started drinking a lot. And, you know, within 6 months of taking my first drink, basically it kind of looked like this. Growing up, I wanted to play college and professional basketball. And, you know, I took the appropriate action to, you know, to train for that. And I had a lot of morals. I grew up in church, and I'm not back in church. I go to church now. It's part of my 11th step, but I grew up in church. And, you know, I had it so morally, spiritually, financially, my parents gave me everything that I would need to be a successful, you know, grown-up lady. And those were things that I really didn't want to. There were things that I wanted to carry into a marriage, for example. There were, you know, goals that I had, such as playing basketball, and I had goals. I didn't just pop out, you know, lazy and you know, lethargic. So I had these goals, and within 6 months of taking my first drink, I quit playing basketball. So that's like my number one, you know, my number one priority is gone, right? I placed myself in a position to be harmed, and so the number one moral that I had was now gone. Basically, you know, I started smoking and drinking, whatever. So basically, within 6 months of taking my first drink, alcohol had already become my master. You know, within 6 months of taking my first drink, and it only got worse from there, you know? And basically, you know, what started to happen is that when I was in high school, I did things like put my hands on my mother. And, you know, I'm a blackout drinker, and sometimes I forget to mention that because I kind of just assume that, like, everybody on earth is a blackout drinker. But, like, I've talked to people outside of AA, like, people don't, like, they don't drink that much. Like, they're like, no, I would never let myself do that. And I'm like, really? How do you not? Like, that was like, it's that point, like, right teetering on that line, but I would just, you know, overshoot it every time. But if I could just not black out, I started to put my hands on my mom, and I would, like, run away, / get kicked out, kind of the thing where it was like, my parents would give me rules, right? And I don't really do well with rules. So they'd say things like, well, you know, you have a little brother in the house who you're putting at harm. If you're going to, you know, come and go, if you're not in by this time, you know, they'd lay these rules, right? So I'd just sleep in my car, and I'd be like, I'm going camping. And, you know, I'm sleeping in my car or whatever, or, like, I'd go days without eating. This is, like, you know, in high school, or you know, what I had started to do is I started to hang out with these entrepreneurs that were a little bit older than me. And when you're a young gal, you don't have to have money, you know? And, you know, it's certainly funny now, and, you know, the reason that I share a lot of the stuff that I do, because when I got to AA, I really, really believed that there were no women on the planet that had done the things that I'd done and lived the way that I lived. And, you know, I share it now, and it's kind of funny, whatever. But the real deal is that there were a couple women who were honest about who and what they were because of their alcoholism. And had it not been for them, I would not have been able to be okay with, you know, the person that I was and grown to be the person that God has, you know, put before you now. So although it's funny, you know, I certainly don't mean to, you know, offend anybody or whatever, but that is who I was, you know, and I started selling my soul to drink. And, you know, I moved, my mom started enrolled, I graduated college or high school because in Tennessee, I'm not from New York, in case you're wondering. In the great state of Tennessee, they have this thing called No Child Left Behind, which basically means, like, you can't fail high school. They just, you know, kick you right through. So I graduated because of that. And, my mom started, she was an enroller. She would just enroll me at all these colleges, you know? And the efforts that my parents, you know, I like to make jokes about it, but honestly, the efforts that my parents made to try to non-alcoholic knows to try to get somebody sober. They did it all, you know, the prayer, the taking me in, the kicking me out, the giving me stuff, the taking away of stuff, the getting the people to try to help, the whatever it took, you know. And I wouldn't be physically, you know, I wouldn't be alive if it weren't for them. But, you know, she did. She would just enroll me in these colleges, and, you know, I would always flunk out. I guess if you're not familiar with the system, when you're enrolled in classes and you don't withdraw, you just get F. Yeah, I guess in college. So I'm currently in school now, and this is like a lot of educational wreckage of the past because I just had Fs. I didn't even know you could withdraw. Like, why would I know even where to do that or that you could? I don't know. People have it together more than me. I didn't know you could do that. So you're going to go to school and you decide you don't want to. You have to go get some papers filled out. It's a big mess if you don't, whatever. So I started flunking out of schools, right? And so I moved to, decided to move to the Panhandle, Florida, where I proceeded to meet this guy, right? There's always, you know, there's always the one. And so I met him, at this house party, and there was one girl, and, you know, I have all brothers and all guy cousins. I'm from a very, like, you know, athletic or no other word term, you know, like, played a lot, so, and I drank with a lot of guys. And I will tell you that since I've come to Alcoholics Anonymous and learned a little bit of truth about myself, I didn't party with those guys because I was one of the guys. I partied with those guys because they didn't have any expectations of how I should live or any objections to my morals or ethics. They didn't ever, you know, say, well, you know, you should really put some clothes on. You're like, I really don't mean it to be funny. I said, you know, if I would have had any women in my life, they would have said, like, what's going on? They would have questioned my behavior, and I just don't hang out with people who question my behavior. You know? And so I moved to the Panhandle, right? And me and this one girl, because that's about as many girls, and there were like, you know, maybe like 10 guys at this military party, and we're drinking out of this trough, and vodka and Twister, right? And we all had this straw, and we're all like around, you know, the rim of this dish, and we're having a chugging contest. You know, we're all, and once you stop, you know, sucking into the straw, you have to stop. You're out, lost. You know, so the other girl, she didn't play it. She's not alcoholic at all. So I'm, you know, going with these guys, and me and this last guy are the last two standing. You know, we're still chugging, you know, this vodka and Twister, and neither one of us would stop because neither one of us were going to lose. You know, and I don't know which one's more severe, my ego or my alcoholism. You know, but we ended up, you know, becoming friends, I guess, that night, and. So then, you know, that night, I guess there was a fight between two of the guys, you know, some of those brownouts where you got like some Polaroids, you know, it's not a moving reel, you know. I'm like in a brownout, and I think I'm gonna break up this fight. These two military guys, clearly, like, I was probably 30 pounds lighter than I am now, and I'm a small gal now, you know. And you know, so he really just—I was at my classiest then. I was about as classy as I got, you know. And so I waited what I thought was an appropriate amount of time before moving in. 2 weeks. I mean, when it's the one, that's a long time. I just could not. And while things on the outside were, you know, progressively got worse the entire time I drank, things on the inside were indescribably worse, you know. And if you're in this room tonight, you probably know, you know, what that feels like. And I'm not good enough with words to describe it, but if you are here, you probably know. And so, he got orders to go to Korea, and I had to go back home, because Lord knows I'm not going to get a job and support myself. My mom started enrolling me in schools again, you know. But this time, since he was in Korea, what I was going to do is, you know, we were going to get it together, you know, we're going to get it together. We're going to do something with our life while he, to make him proud, you know. We're going to go to school or something. And we're gonna, you know, take a shower, and we're gonna, get a full tank of gas from my dad, you know, we're gonna put it all in the gas. We're gonna do some things, you know? And, we would have these plans, whatever. And, you know, I'm a good thinker, I'm not a good doer, you know? So basically what would happen is my head would think, like, okay, we're gonna do this. And it would immediately follow by, oh my God, you suck it, like, you're not gonna do this. You know, and I would immediately just be like, oh my gosh, you're so right, we're not going to do this. And then my head would just progressively continue to gnaw at me until I could get that even comfort that would come at once that I take it with my friends. Boom, 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 this is gnawing at me, you know? And so I had to get that relief. I had to seek that relief somewhere. I didn't know about AA, and I'm glad I didn't know until I got here. I'm glad I didn't know before about AA. I went to my first class, and I'll never forget, and I went to my first class at this new school. It was like 10 a.m. I was probably drunk, or either still drunk and hadn't even been to bed. I'm sure I was physically intoxicated from either starting or finishing whatever period that was. But I was sitting there in class, and immediately when I sat down, I'll never forget, I had immediately it started. Oh, this is a bad move. Like, we can't do this. And this guy looks at me, and he's like, do you party? And I don't know if he could tell, but it's like, you know, I was drunk, I smelled like booze, I looked like booze, you know, I had that look, you know? But alcoholics are like special breed. Like, they just look, I looked very, like, just a drunk mess. I looked it, you know? And what happened, you know, while I was saying before I segue into that guy is that me and this guy, the one, he was 12 hours away from me, time clock wise. He's in Korea. So we would be on Skype, and, you know, we would get drunk and break up a lot on Skype. It was devastating. So what happened is, like, I was not allowed to forget if we were together or not. So when this guy says to me, you party, immediately, and this is, you know, without a foundation of Alcoholics Anonymous and without a conscious relationship with God, no matter what I know is riding on me not drinking, I will absolutely say yes. When someone questions me or when my head says, are you going to drink? My answer will absolutely be yes. Now, up to this point, I crossed every spiritual line I'd ever had. I had done a lot of financial, educational. I had no relationships in my life. My parents barely spoke to me. I used to beat up my mom when I was drinking. I had, like, I don't know, I think maybe 12 car wrecks. There were a lot of signs that had already come and gone that were like, if you're just a problem drinker, I would have stopped drinking. But there were a lot of problems, you know, as a result of my drinking. And, you know, as a result of me in general and the way that I live. And without the relationship with God, no matter what I know was riding on it. And at this point in time, the gig was up. Like, I knew what happened when I drank. I wasn't one of the people who I hear sometimes and say, like, I didn't know what was going to happen when I drank, and that was the problem. The problem for me and, you know, the insanity of my alcoholism is that I knew what was going to happen when I drank. And I couldn't not drink anyway. You know, I knew that I was going to come to with somebody and not know if I volunteered or not. I knew that I was going to crash my car. I knew that I was going to disappoint somebody. If there was anybody left to disappoint, I would disappoint them. Like, I knew that I was going to feel like the biggest scumbag on the planet, and I couldn't not drink. you know, and that's the insanity of my alcoholism. And, you know, so at that point in time, I didn't know it, like, in that much of detail, but I knew enough to know that, like, I should really say no, you know. And my answer immediately, without, you know, the recovery people would be without defense against the first drink, you know, I was just, boom, yes, I do, absolutely, let's, here we go right now, and we did. And, you know, I pretty much, he played baseball at that school. He played baseball at that school, we'll see. And I pretty much moved into the baseball dorm at that point, and didn't go back to school. And, you know, by this time, my mom had clearly been questioning my drinking for quite some time. And she, you know, but I would always tell her, and I really believe this, and I, you know, it was not dishonest, it was delusion. I really believe that if a great enough thing came along for me to stop drinking, that I could. You know, all these other things, it was little speed bumps, you know, but they weren't really like the real deal. And I didn't know, it's because I did not understand alcoholism, and I really believed that I was just changing my mind. Come to, and I think, not going to drink today, we're going to do something, we're going to do big things, you know, and then I would not be able to not drink, and then I think, okay, well, we just changed our mind, yeah, we did, you know, and the sad part is that so many people die of alcoholism and have no idea that how delusional that is, you know, and like I said, it wasn't dishonest, I was not lying, I would have passed the lie detector test if you would ask me, you know, I really believe that, well, okay, we're just being a little over the top, well, the sound's going to be different tomorrow, we'll not drink, you know? And so she was, you know, pounding me about my drinking, and, you know, even though me and this guy would break up, like, every other, you know, 4 days or something on Skype, as sick as I was, and as sick as we were together, I loved him at that point in my life more than I'd ever loved anything. You know, and not that it was like, but with every single like cell, I would have done anything to be with him. And so my mom said, okay, well, if you'll go to rehab, she was enrolling me, you know, again, she's enrolling me. And she said, if you'll go to rehab and not drink for like, I don't know, 30 days or something crazy, she said, I'll buy a ticket to go to Korea. Boom, I'm there, you know. So in my head, I'm like, okay, this is my reason. This is my good enough reason to stop drinking. I loved him so much. Like, with every single thing that I could love at that point in time, I loved him. Probably the only thing in my life that I loved. And so I agreed to go to this place. And the night before, I was out drinking with this fella down by the creek. And we used to date, and his pregnant girlfriend was back at the house. And, you know, that's like the story of me, you know, that's not any joke. So I come home that night, and I think I put my hands on my mom that night, too. And I come to the next morning, and she's like, today's the day we're going to go check out this recap, right? You know, and people, like, alcoholics are very strange critters. So that was in, I guess, May of 2006. I always forget to tell this in order, but in January is my belly button birthday, January 29th. So for my birthday, a few months earlier, I had been out for a few days. And when I was going in, I knew it was bad, so you know, when you know it's bad going in, it would be bad coming out. So it was bad, it was real bad. And I was real sick. And I used to, you know, get alcohol poisoning fairly often, and I would be really, really sick, but I knew we'd make it through, you know? No death really involved, but this particular day I was coming to, I really thought I was dying. You know, I had come to, the best way that I can describe it, I felt like a vacuum was on the inside, literally, like, sucking every, like, organ out. Like, I really felt like I was shriveling up and dying. And I don't know what it was, I didn't go to the doctor or things like that. Then they'll try to call somebody or, like, you know, blood work, whatever, lots of things. And so I called this guy, you know, and he came and got me. And anyway, like, I don't know what state I was in. I passed out, blacked out. I don't know. I was in some particular state. And I come to, and I'm, like, laying on the only piece of furniture in the living room. I'm picturing it right now. I'm like laying on this piece of this couch, this like rotten stained couch. The floors are all stained. There's like a TV on a milk carton. There are all these people like walking around, really scary looking, that I don't know. I only know this one guy that brought me there. And I'm like, you know, unconscious on this couch. And I like cracked my eyes. I couldn't even put water. They were trying to put water in my mouth. I couldn't even hold water in. And I'm like, cracked my eyes open. I guess like God needed me to get like an image of this, you know? So I cracked my eyes open and I look around and I'm like, and it wasn't like a judgmental, I don't belong here. It wasn't like, oh, I'm so better than these people, whatever they were doing. It was just like, I guess it was like the God that was still living inside of me, that I can't get rid of, was just like, you know, like, you're my kid. You don't belong. Like, you don't have to be here, you know? So I was out for a few days, I guess, and I came to and I was back home, whatever. So fast forward a few months. And, you know, my mom says we're going to go check out this treatment center. And, you know, my standards of living clearly are not that high, but I need to go check out this treatment center. You know, we're going to check it out. And, you know, basically what happened there is my parents spent, you know, $15,000 on a big book. And I drank after it, you know. And I'm not naughty treatment centers, but I'm, you know, I'm just saying that what I found here in AA and through the 12 steps is a design for living, you know, that works. And, you know, no amount of me talking about my feelings will cure my alcoholism, but me taking some certain actions that are really pointed out to me, that will treat my alcoholism. You know, actions that are made to get me closer to God and as a result closer to y'all, so that I don't have to feel like I suck anymore. But, you know, just talking won't really give me really, you know, some little things. And so I drank after. And I guess at that, and this was the bribe, like I wasn't going to drink, you know, because of, you know, I got bribed to go see him. And I drank anyway. And at some point along there, I've been introduced to AA. I don't really know how it happened. But basically, long story short is, never picked up a chip. I never got a sponsor. I don't know if I went to one meeting or five meetings or probably could have been one or five. I don't know. But anyway, so I ended up, I was drinking again. I know that. And I don't know how many more times I drank. But the last night that I drank was really no different as far as, you know, what was going on outside. But something inside was different because what happened, I'm really glad God allowed me to be able to recognize this after I got sober. But, you know, I was going to go to the club, because that's where you go if you're not, you know, if you want to stay sober, you go to the club. And I was 20, so I'm like, oh, well, you know, I'm 21, so I'm like, please, I got sober when I was 20. If I wanted to drink, I drank clearly. I'm alcoholic when I wasn't 20, or I wasn't 21. So, you know, I go out, and I told her I was going to drink. I told my friend that I was with, I was going to drink, whatever, which is, you know, standard course of action. But something inside of me, like, I didn't want to drink. And the difference is that it wasn't like, I don't want to drink because I'm going to crash my car, because I'm going to get dumped, or because I'm going to be, like, it wasn't because of anything. It was just a period. Like, I don't want to drink, period. Not because of, you know, not, man. But, and I went out and I drank, and I got drunk and I blacked out and I, you know, hooked up with this girl's boyfriend, and, you know, it was just all the normal, like, standard, so all of this stuff on the outside was certainly by no means the worst night on the outside of my drinking, but when I came to that next morning, at one of those meetings, the phrase, pitiful, incomprehensible, demoralization went through, it got stuck in here. Y'all planted that somehow, y'all snuck it right on in there. I didn't know what that meant. At this point in time, I was like, I started to stutter. I started seeing things that were not there. Like, I was really in bad shape. And, so I couldn't necessarily formulate what those words themselves meant. But it just sucked. And it sounded the way that I felt. Like, it was just like, wow, you suck. You know, like, to the deepest part of me that I sucked. And I decided that day that I had to kill myself. And I decided that I would go to an AA meeting first that night because, when I was younger, they had me on head meds, they had me as a head dog. doctor, and I went to church, and I went to this treatment center now, and I was still, I thought it was, I didn't think alcohol had anything to do with it. I thought it was crazy. And that is somewhat true. But God can heal everything, apparently, because, you know, stand before you free today. But so in my head, now I've never been honest with anybody. I've never sought God through, you know, church as I've, you know, with, there was never the level of desperation and seeking to get better that I had when I came to AA. So I never really tried all that stuff. In my head, I had tried all that stuff, you know, so my head is the truth, right? So I was like, well, I'm going to go to an AA meeting so that when that doesn't work, I can confidently kill myself and know that I tried everything. You know, and it, you know, for your night probably makes sense to you. You probably did something similar. And, you know, so I went to an AA meeting on July 9th of 2006 and never left AA since. And that has nothing. Absolutely nothing to do with me. Don't really know why all this crap, but okay. Let's work it out, I guess. On July 8th of 2006, I could not drink for one day, and you know, from July 9th, 2006 to today, I haven't drank. And, you know, sometimes I get so caught up in the really good life that I have that I start to think, like, oh, well, why couldn't I have an experience like Bill Wilson had, you know, with the boom, boom, boom. And there, if I'm looking for, like, there is nothing else but a boom, boom, boom that I had. For me to go, I couldn't not drink for one single day on July 8th. And on July 9th, I didn't ever drink again. And I don't ever have to drink again. And if that's not boom, 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 I don't know what the heck else I'm waiting on. You know what I mean? And, so I got, you know, that obviously that didn't happen until a few years later. I was getting sober, sucked. It was the worst thing, you know, in the beginning ever. So if you're new, it's not going to suck forever. It's going to suck for now. It was awful, you know, because physical sobriety is what drove me to drinking. You know, physically, you know, I was psychotic. And actually, they wanted to put me back on meds because I was just very, very unstable. And, I refused because I was going to be sober, you know, just, I wasn't going to do anything in AA, I was just going to refuse, that's not it, there were two, where I got sober at the time, there weren't meetings every day, and there were two women where I got sober, one claimed that she had 5 years, and one claimed that she had 3 years. Now, that night, when I went to that meeting, it was a Joe and Charlie Big Book study of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're not familiar with Joe and Charlie, you can get the CDs offline, or the MP3s. MP3s the kids call them nowadays. online. You definitely should. If you don't know who that is, they go through the Big Book, and they're like these little, they've since passed away, but they're these like really sweet, oh, they're, it's like a lullaby, really. And they laugh. It's okay. Attraction rather than promotion, right? So I go to this Joe and Charlie meeting, and for whatever reason, like, I don't, it's just God's grace, because I have no idea. I have no idea how I ended up with a sponsor. I have no idea. I don't know if I actually picked up a chip or not, but I ended up with a sponsor. And I don't, like, it's just God. I didn't have a desire to stop drinking. I was not planning on getting sober. I was not planning on staying sober. I was not planning on anything. I was not planning on anything but killing myself. And so I ended up with a sponsor, and the reason that I picked her was because she said she had 3 years. And I thought in my head, I'm like, okay, well, nobody goes 3 or 5 years without drinking, but at least the lady with 3 years, Ginger, she's a better liar because she picked 3, the other lady picked 5. Like, I'm going to be a better liar. Like, I don't even have time to get that bottle. You know, like, whatever. And so I picked this lady, and you know, she's not still in AA, unfortunately, but she was certainly my messenger and my angel. And you know, what happened is God started to disclose some things to me, and I don't remember how long I've been sober. The beginning is like chronologically, mentally, physically, it was, it's all, I mean, I have memories, but I don't really know what order they happened in. But at some point in time, I said to her, and this must have been God, because I don't have this type of, you know, like, introspection myself, but I told her, I was like, I don't think that I can drink, but I don't think that I could not drink either. And she opened up, the book was right there on the table in front of us, you know, and she opened it up to a vision for you, and it was talking about the jumping off place, and how he couldn't imagine, you know, life with her without drinking, and that he would wish for the end. And I was like, oh my, like, basically the exact same words that had just fallen out of my mouth were on the page in front of me. And I thought that for a while my mom was telling people in AA what to say. You know, and we knew everything. I've partied with a bunch of kids whose parents were in AA. Like, I knew everybody in the town. And but when I saw that, my thought was like, my mom did not. This book was written before she was born. She didn't have nothing to do with this. And you know, it's like tiny little things like that that were just like, you know, okay, well, maybe I can do this one other thing, the one next thing, you know, and that's kind of been the story of my sobriety, is like, put myself at a crossroad, you know, and I'm either gonna take one action either way, you know, and I kind of let myself get to that place. And, you know, the one came back from Korea, and I saw Beth's Tampa, and I was like 8 or 9 months sober. Did my fifth step and moved to Tampa the next day. And against my sponsor's, you know, better judgment, but not listening to a sponsor, this is true love, you know? And as it turns out, you know, God meet me where I am, and God met me in that situation. And basically what happened is I hated Tampa AA, right? I have no idea what AA is about, because I've been just like not drinking barely one day at a time, you know? And so I get down here and I'm going to new meetings for like 58 minutes, you know what I mean? Get in, get out. And you know, they're handing me those stupid number sheets. And I know people are well intentioned with those number sheets, but quite frankly, I'm not gonna call Donna and Deborah and Barbara and tell them that I wanna eat a shotgun, because I have no idea who they are and I'm not gonna call them. And there are people who are more willing than me who, you know, do things like that, but not me. I don't have the humility that it requires to call a stranger and say, I'm ready to kill myself. Who are you and what can I do? You know, I just want to suffer. And so I go into these meetings blaming my, you know, alcoholism, my dry alcoholism on Tampa AA, because, you know, y'all suck. And so I happened to get off work one night, happened to, aka God, but the story, happened to get out work early one night, and I noticed that I was going to get to go to this Joe and Charlie meeting, and y'all, I told y'all, I'm going to get on my pitch for Joe and Charlie. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to go there, because I'll get to hear them, so I go there, and I meet this girl, and I had up until this point didn't know that people got sober, right? So I'm like, on top of my treat alcoholism, I'm a martyr. I'm like, oh God, I'm like taking mine for all the young people. Oh, this is so dramatic. Like, And I really didn't know any other end. Like, I didn't know people that's over him, but I really did feel like I was like my cross to carry, you know? Like, oh, you know? So I go to some, and I meet this girl, and she's like, hi! She's all excited, I'm Betsy! And she's like, face talker. Oh, still, I face talker really will get to me. And this guy, really, and I was like, don't hit her, you're gonna go to jail, don't hit her, you're gonna go to jail. She was coming at me with that AA love, you know, the hugging and the bouncing and the face talking. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to go to jail. Please God, let me not go to jail. And so this girl was all over my face. And she's like, you should come to our night as the young people's group. And I'm like, no, you know, I don't have time for that. And, you know, my schedule was so busy. So what happened is I went to that meeting, and that has been my home group ever since, I'll say. And long story short, a week after I went to that meeting twice, and God removed me from the situation with that guy. So it's not explainable today, still to this day, and I have nothing else to, I personally cannot take any credit for it whatsoever, but I was removed from that situation, and I ended up moving with this girl on her floor from my home group. There were three of us that lived in this apartment together. They known me for like 9 days. And I was like probably 9 months sober at this time, just breaking up, and it's chaotic. I'm untreated alcoholism, a breakup, and on top of that, I had to quit my job because I worked there when I was with that guy. And you know, you can't keep the same job, you know, because it'll make you think of him, whatever. I was jobless. turns out the girl that I moved in with was really struggling, and she thought that it would be, you know, that I could help her, you know. So I like to say it was my way of, you know, giving back, is, you know, I helped her out. And we lived there for a while, and then basically what happened is there was this other guy, and he I don't know, some of you might remember Eric, he used to live here. He was on the institutions committee, and basically I decided I was going to date him. And we never dated, as a sidebar, we never dated. But I always thought we were gonna. And I thought he was kind of like, I didn't realize it was like, you know, higher, like that the group level was like the top of AA at the time. I thought he kind of was running things in my group. So I, you know, I gotta go to the top, I gotta date him, because he's at the top, you know? And he was doing some things in AA, and I'm like, okay, well, I'm gonna start doing some things in AA, because, you know, he's gonna date me if he knows that I can do some things today, too. So, you know, I firmly believe 100% that motives do not matter, because, like I said, God loves me so much that he will meet me where I am. And, you know, if your sponsor says something different, listen to your sponsor. I'm by no means, like, you know, smart or anything. But, you know, God certainly met me where I'm at, because if regardless of where my head is at or where my motives are at, if my feet are firmly planted and my behind is firmly planted in a chair in a meeting with Alcoholics Anonymous, there's really nothing that can go wrong from there. You know, I certainly cannot get a message transmitted to me if I'm on my couch watching TV, you know? And I certainly can't be useful being there either. And so I started following him around, and, you know, that's how I actually got involved in the institutions committee. You know, and what happens in AA is like, they're like, oh, I saw you here, so let me ask, you know, this is kind of one of those, like, domino effect, you know, once you get in, you can't get back out. You're in AA, you're like trapped once you get involved in service. It just kind of keeps on coming. And, you know, I finally got with a sponsor and, you know, went through the steps for real. I've actually been through the steps a couple times, and I don't know if that's right or wrong, but it certainly helped me stay sober and allowed me to be more effective in the women that I get to sponsor. And I'll tell you a real quick story. This lady who is now my stepmom, I tried to kill her a couple times when I was drinking. And I had my defense plan. She was not my stepmom at the time. But I had it planned out, and I had my whole defense planned out, and I had how I was going to kill her planned out. I went to her house and was waiting on her. She never came home, and I got drunk and had to go. And then I had to be chased from town, and I was drunk on that too, and so she lost me, and I would call her like every morning at like 2 a.m. like a year straight and talk about I was going to chop her up into pieces and her daughter and all these evil things that I was going to do to them. And she's not my stepmom, right? So things got real awkward when she became my stepmom. So I've been living down here, and you know, I think one of the biggest things that we miss out on is the freedom that comes from amends. And I think that I don't hear a lot of amends talked about. I think it's because sometimes, okay, the way that it was explained to me is staying sober is not an amends to anybody else. I'm staying sober so I can stay alive. It is not for anybody else, you know? Like, they're probably glad that I am, but I don't get to get off that easy. That's just my, you know, like I said, if your sponsor says that's fine, you go ahead and be in sober, that's your amends to everybody. So I started making these amends, right? I went back home and I had to make this direct amends to her, right? Because clearly I'd caused some harm. And so I talked to my sponsor, and I had this discussion with my stepmom, and her response, like, her response was not pay back the money that he stole or this, that, or the other, you know, any one of the number of things that she should have rightly asked me. She's like, just don't drink. And I'm like, ooh, scot-free, you know, I'm not drinking. This is my amends to her. And, but, you know, what she could see was that alcohol was killing me. And then, you know, I was probably like maybe a year, I don't know, 2 years sober or something. I got asked to speak at this thing that at the time, I'm like, oh, I'm moving on up in the ranks, you know, I'm speaking of big things now. And Lord have mercy. But by this time I'd made this amends to her, and I had started, like, we don't hang out, we don't even need to, but like I tried to respectful of her, and I try to include her in my life because she is a part of my life, and it's also, you know, an indirect amends to my dad too, because it's his wife. And You know, my dad called me crying shortly after I left from that trip and was like, she told me what happened, and he was just crying, you know, crying because y'all told me I need to make this amends so that I could stay sober, and people around me just respond to those amends, you know, and I'm not making amends, you know, for their response, but the cool thing is all my amends have worked out crazy like that, and I was a couple years sober, and my dad was going to fly down and hear me, you know, hear me talk, he was flying in, and so something had come up. He owned a business and then come up last minute, and he wasn't going to be able to come. And my stepmom texted me. She's not even calling point yet at that point. You know, she was going to call. She texted me and said, I'm going to go ahead and surprise your dad, and I'm going to take care of the stuff here at work so he can come hear you. And so she surprised him and went ahead and made it all happen. And then she actually recently just 2 weeks ago, I think, finished her last round of chemo. She had a lot of really bad cancer. And, you know, I saw her the whole night, and when my dad found out, I was like, do you need to, you know, I'll come home, help you with work, whatever. And he's like, honey, I know you will. And I started talking about that at meetings, and I was telling him how people in my home group and people that knew him, that met him at meetings, you know, were praying for him. And, you know, because he asked me to. And so I'm basically, you know, the whole point is that, you know, I came to AA and didn't end up killing myself, which was the goal. And after I've been sober for a little while, I'm thinking like, okay, well, I'm just gonna not drink one day at a time. And you know, as a result of taking some actions that I don't think make sense, still to this day, I don't think what I do makes sense for the problems at hand. You know, I need more money, but why is helping this person gonna get, the spiritual solutions never make sense in my crazy head. But taking actions that I don't think make sense pushed my loud head quiet enough so that God can, you know, give me something even better than I wanted, you know, and I'm really out of time, so I'm gonna stop talking so y'all can get back to your really the fun stuff of the night. So thank you for being
back up here just a second. Rochelle. Go ahead. Thank you very much. That's great.
Lindsay.
Ashley.
I was looking for Ashley.
Oh, well, I forgot to tell everybody who I was, so it's, you know, it's all. I'm an alcoholic, by the way. My name's Linda.
Hi, Lori.
Lori. It's good. It's all good. You know, when you were sharing, I'm sitting there going, yep.
Yeah,
and the blonde hair does not matter. Everclear, yep. Anyway, great. That was wonderful. I appreciate you, you know, getting up here and doing what you do. If it wasn't for people getting up here and sharing and telling their story and opening up, I wouldn't stay sober. If it wasn't for faith that people in front of me are staying sober, I wouldn't have stayed sober. So, you know, I love watching many people get out there and do this because I can so identify with their story. I forgot to tell you guys, no fires.
No fires.
I know, bringing it down. Shh. You know, darn. But yeah, we can't light fires because the ground's too dry. And it will catch real quick. Okay, so just... I did my bad part. Are you happy now? Okay. So now what?
Karaoke.
We close with the...
Karaoke.
He's talking about a party. Yes, we got karaoke after this. And then tomorrow we're going to do the countdown. Virgil's going to do the countdown. And we're going to do the chips. We're going to celebrate lots of anniversaries. So come back tomorrow and have more fun. Meantime, karaoke. Well, meantime, surrender prayer.
Lord's Prayer.
Lord's Prayer.